You are listening to a podcast from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and it's a great pleasure to see all of you today. We're going to have a conversation with one of the people, I think, who can claim to have played an extraordinary role in the reshaping of Russia as we know it for the last 20 years, or at least my generation of professional involvement with the place. And Boris Nemtsov has had any number of different titles during his career, but I think I first met you when you were mayor of Nizhny Novgorod.
Governor.
And after that, assumed many different positions in the government and in the legislature as Russia went through a very difficult time of the 1990s and on into this decade. And he has remained, I think, a consistent advocate for the liberal cause and what is perhaps best in the hopes of those who would like to see a representative, accountable government responsible to the Russian people emerge from this great time of transition and change. And so, Boris, I know you were supposed to talk about the state of democracy in Russia, but I hope you'll give us your perspective about how you look ahead as well. And we're going to do this a little bit differently from the usual format where we let our guest speak for a few minutes and then we all sort of set upon him with questions. Rather, I've asked Bob Kagan to set upon him with questions right at the beginning and try to get Boris's perspective out in a number of areas that are of particular interest to those of us here in Washington who episodically understand some of the things going on in your country. So, Boris, it's great to have you with us. And, Bob, I'll turn the floor over to you.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Jim. And it's really a great honor to have you here. I appreciate your taking the time to come over. It's an interesting time in American foreign policy. We're dealing with a whole variety of difficult issues, some of which have something to do with questions of democracy or non-democracy. But your own experiences are so valuable for us. I really appreciate you making yourself available. So let me start by asking you this. In a way, looking at the present but also looking ahead, as Jim suggests, I'm wondering what we can take from your electoral experience most recently in the Sochi election. I've heard there's two different ways of looking at this, I guess, or at least I've heard two. One is that your experience in that election was a classic case of an autocratic government that's not allowing any real democracy or democratic processes to go forward. I've also heard a quite different argument from one of our colleagues that really the fact that you were permitted to run was in fact a kind of victory for liberal forces, and that it was a decision, according to this gentleman, a decision of Putin's, but in any case, a decision of the government's to give you this opportunity. So I'm wondering, was the election result from your point of view a hopeful sign or a depressing sign of the future?
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, James, for so kind introduction, which is very rare in Russia, but in Washington it's like always. Well, and let me just answer Bob's question to describe what's happened indeed in Sochi, right? Just for a few minutes, right? Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, Sochi is my hometown. I was born many, many years ago in this town, 50 years ago. Well, and this is one of the reasons why I decided to take part in the elections. Second point, a lot of intelligent people from Sochi invited me to take part because they were very tired about corruption in Sochi, about disaster concerning Olympic Games preparation, because Sochi is a subtropical resort, you know, and Russia is a very cold country with a lot of snow and ice. But and it's difficult to find a place where there is no snow at all, but Putin did, right? And he decided to to organize the Winter Olympic Games in the most warmest place in Russia, well, which is a great achievement of Putinism. And I think a lot, do we have some examples in the history of Russia looking like the same? And I found Nikita Khrushchev decided to grow corn in Siberia and in the North Pole, maybe you know that, in Murmansk region, Arkhangelsk, etc. And Putin wants to be like Nikita Khrushchev and do the same to organize an Olympic Games, Winter Olympic Games in Sochi. But people are very suffering about this preparation because 5,000 of them will be replaced from the beach and lose their jobs, lose their apartments, everything. And people wanted somebody with federal recognition to and Sochi background, right, to run. Well, really, I was registered, and it was a lot of contradictional discussion inside Kremlin. Is it possible for me to start or not? And Putin, as far as rumors are concerned from Kremlin, said that it's impossible, but Medvedev said that it will be international scandal because Nemtsov is well-known guy throughout the world, and let he will be in the list, but do what you want to win him. Well, a few points concerning election. First of all, this is not an election. It was special operation to take a power, right? Second, they organize, even for Putin, unbelievable censorship. It was forbidden in the federal level. What I'm talking about is a federal media. It was forbidden to use three words during campaign on, I mean, channels, Putin's channels, right? First word, Sochi. Second, elections. Third, Olympic Games. Well, second point, censorship on the regional and local level. All of the TV companies, four TV companies in Sochi, all of the radio stations, including Love Radio, for example, or Ruskaya Radio, etc., they send a letter to the electoral committee that they are not interested in election at all. This is not an event, and they don't want even to take money. Well, that's why they will be absolutely separate from this event, and that's why it was completely forbidden for me to have any time on TV. I have no any second on TV, any second on radio station, and no sentences even in the small circulated newspapers. Zero. Next point, Putin, Surkov, and regional authorities prepared two movies about me. First movie that I destroy Soviet Union, destroy Nizhny Novgorod region, sail Russia to the Paris Club, homosexual, and married Azerbaijan wife. the last one is very important. I explain why. Because 35% of the population of Sochi is Armenian, about 130,000. Well, and Azerbaijan is just a few thousand. And tension between two nations is everybody knows. Well, this movie was shown on regional TV about 100 times. Four sets in the morning, four sets tonight, through the week. The second movie looks more attractive. Nemtsov is a Korean spy, fortunately South Korean, because he wants to cancel the Winter Olympic Games in Sochi and want to replace an Olympic Games from Sochi to South Korea for $200,000 only. Well, which is, for me, you know, it looks like terrible news, just $200,000. This movie was shown 100 times on TV. Well, next point, elections. They opened polls 2 weeks before the day of elections, and teachers, doctors, you know, soldiers, police services put to the buses, sent to the polls, and have to vote. And their bosses explained them that it's necessary to vote for Putin candidate because if you don't, you will lose your jobs, right? What was our achievement? We calculated separately. This is 2 weeks elections and person who voted at the day of elections. Previous elections. I got 0%. And Putin candidate, whose name is Pakhomov, he got 100%, which is not the best result, because in Chechnya, for example, Putin got 110%. Well, that's it looks like very, very honest elections. Right? And the day of election, I got 23%, which is the best result for Democrats during the last 15 years, 23%. And I got twice bigger than communist candidate, which is absolutely unusual for Russia, because mainly the second place is under communist. Yeah. And Zhuganov supported his candidate in Sochi, and his candidate, he's from Sochi, very good guy, but we did better, right? Well, they arrested Secret Services involvement. This is very important. They arrested all of our materials for the beginning, I mean newspapers, etc., about 150,000. After that, they organized Musky show in all of the newsprint companies who signed an agreement with me to print materials. Well, they arrested a lot of our activists, my activists. I have a relatives in Sochi. What is very sad story that nobody met me because everybody understood that if they do this, they will be fired without any opportunity to get a job. You know, Sochi is a very small city, and people are very cautious about the future, not only in the Sochi, but even in the Sochi. That's why relatives don't connect with me. Campaign. It was forbidden to me to meet in the offices, because business who is so brave to invite me finally get special investigation of tax police and FSB, etc., etc. That's why I had just three meetings in the office. One guy from sanatorium Neva was immediately fired next day, and the next understand everything immediately. That's why my campaign based mainly on trains. This is great idea. Even Obama didn't understand that. If you sit down to the train and move from one wagon to another, right, people come and go. That's why you connect with a lot of people. Sochi is a long-distance city, about 140 kilometers. You spend 3 hours on one side, 3 hours on another side. This is one of the ideas. Another idea is to go to the marketplace, because Sochi is a, you know, very warm city, and a lot of people met each other in the marketplace, in the streets, in cafe, taxi, etc. That's why it was a lot of meetings, but very without any announcement at all, because if you want to announce something, immediately FSB explained that this is impossible, you know, that's forbidden, etc. That's why, of course, this is not an election. Putin was involved himself. He visited Sochi twice during campaign. First time he shake hand for the brilliant guy Pahomov, who speaks broken Russian. And this is one of the reasons that it's absolutely forbidden for him to connect with journalists. He's a single candidate in the world who refused to go on the polls in the day of elections because he's afraid of journalists. And he said that, you know, how to answer questions, because there are a lot of journalists from the United States, from European countries, etc. That's why he said that he's very sick, he's very tired of campaign, and refused to go. Well, special operations, just two I want to tell you. One is ammonia attack. Surkov, friends and his team, Nashi, was involved in campaign, and one of them, who looked like transsexual, you know, he decided to present me flowers. Another transsexual decided to push me to the eyes ammonia. Fortunately, water was not far from the place where they did. Well, fortunately, Sochi police service investigated it very carefully, because they don't know what does mean Nash at all. But after that, they were very much disappointed that they decided to investigate. But at the beginning, they do. Well, second story, when I got an account, my electoral account, I decided to not give an information in public about this account, because I was completely sure that I got money throughout the world immediately. Well, that's why I keep it in secret. But next day, I got money from New York City, from JP Morgan Chase Bank, $5,000 from Brooklyn, well, which is strictly forbidden according to Russian law. And 1 hour later, Electoral Committee decided to fire me immediately because it's forbidden to get money from abroad the country. Fortunately, my financial manager sent money during 15 minutes back to the United States, and we sent a letter to the president of JP Morgan explaining him that this is absolutely illegal and let you investigate. It seems to me that this is money from FSB or maybe terroristic money. Well, and after that, I sent a letter to Surkov that and suggest him to send me money from Israel and shekel and from Berlin and from London in pounds to give openly information about agents of Kremlin throughout the world. Of course, they stopped that. They stopped that. Well, that's why this is not an election. Of course, this is, I can say, pazor for Putin and for his team. Well, and our result is quite promising. That's why we are looking to go forward to the elections in the Moscow Duma, which will be in October 11 this year. And we understand everything. We understand that this is 100% fraud. We even understand why Putin and his team, including Lavrov, adopted elections in Iran, because Iran looks better than Russia as far as elections are concerned. Iran looks better because, I don't know, first of all, Ahmadinejad opponent got more than 30%. Do you know any example in the modern Russia when somebody got more than 30% in the federal elections? Elections, so-called elections of Medvedev in 2008. Who was in the second place? Zhuganov. What was the result? 15%. That's why 30 looks very honest. And this is competition, right? That's why now they say that, okay, everything is great. Ahmadinejad did great job. 2 days later, he visits Ekaterinburg, you know, to take part in the summit, etc. Well, that's why for Russian authorities, maybe this is an election, but for the people in the world, this is not. But this is an opportunity for us to suggest different strategy than Putin implemented during the last 10 years. Next very important news from Russia, that everybody believes that if you have expensive oil, you have lucky Russia. If you have cheap oil, you have problems in Russia. It was in the past, but not now. Now we have very expensive oil, $70 per barrel. When I was a minister of fuel and energy, price was 10, and my dream was 40. I believe that if we will get finally 40, we will be like in the United Emirates. Now Putin has 70, and economic performance is like disaster, minus 10% of GDP. Industrial index minus 17% in May and in April. Unemployment rate is more than 10%. That's why, of course, these guys, you know, they're very afraid about their power. And, of course, there is no any chance to get an honest elections because they will fail immediately. They will fail immediately. But anyway, this is for solidarity, and I'm very proud that I represent Solidarity, new United Democratic Opposition Organization. Well, Solidarity will continue to take part in the local and regional elections just to suggest different view. There is another way. Not only Putinism is good for Russia. Putinism is disaster for Russia. We suggest a little bit different.
Okay. I guess I asked the right question. Let me give you a view that I think is fairly current here in Washington, very, very common, which is, first of all, there's no reason to expect any real political change in Russia, that, the Putinism or with Medvedev is here to stay.
Medvedev-Putinism.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. It's here to stay. And second, and therefore, the United States and other countries of the world have to do business with these people. What exactly is the problem with that? Why should it matter to the United States or European countries or anybody else what kind of government we have in Russia as long as we can make deals?
First point, anti-Americanism is the key point of Putinism. Even now, how to explain that people in Russia are very suffering because of crisis? Not only in Pikhalevo, but in 20 cities. For my estimation, we have about 25 Pikhalevos now. In the Far East, in Siberia, in Urals, etc. About 25. How to explain? The only explanation that this is America, which is a motherland of crisis, and all of the terrible things come from America. And I'm sure that if Putin will be in the power, it's impossible to change. Resetting is completely impossible with Putin. Completely impossible. I understand that there are naive people in Washington, D.C., who believe that if you pronounce the word resetting and to reset, it's happened. Sometimes word looks like material. But I don't think that with Putin it's possible. Second point, I understand that Medvedev and Putin, this is one team, but these two guys differ from each other, and you have to take into account this. First point, Medvedev is responsible, according to Constitution, for foreign policy, for military policy, for defense policy. All of these questions are absolutely important for Obama and for American people, right? That's why if you want to connect with Russia, you have to connect with Medvedev. Not because I like him, I don't. But because of rules of law. According to Russian law, Medvedev is responsible. I know that so-called realpolitik guys here say that, yes, we know, but Putin is a real boss of Russia, that's why we want to connect with him. This is 100% mistake. 100% mistake. I explain you why. Because if you connect with him, he's not responsible, first of all. Secondly, everybody knows what will be the next. What will be the next? The next, the U.S. will be responsible for everything once again, and nothing happened. If you believe that you will solve with him Iran problem or some other problem, this is naive view. That's why to connect with Medvedev, this is not 100% chance to win. But this is, first of all, Russian constitution, and second, an opportunity to reset, and chance to reset. This is small chance, but chance. Next point, Medvedev has huge problem. And this is not a problem of crisis. This is not a problem of unemployment. This is not a problem of suffering in Pikhalevo. He is not the president. This is a huge problem of this gentleman. And if Obama will help him to be, it will be not bad for resetting. Not bad, because his dream, I believe, is to be the president. Not selected, but real. Well, that's why I think that in upcoming visit of Obama, it will be great if Obama will say that we know who is the president of Russia and we connect with this gentleman and we will be involved very completely to relationship and to the talks with Medvedev. As far as Putin is concerned, he is not responsible at all. He's responsible for pensions, for jobs, for social securities, for unemployment, etc., for domestic. That's why if Obama will connect with him and try to solve the problem in North Korea, what does it mean? He plays by Putin's rules, which is crazy, which is completely crazy. This is against the Constitution. Well, we understand that transformation from authoritarian style to democracy, the best way, peaceful way, is to give chance Medvedev to be a real president. We don't believe that he is Democrat. We don't believe in that. We want to just to have finally open and honest elections, and we want to give Russian people to take part in these elections. An opportunity to help Medvedev to be the president is one of the ways for liberalization of Russia. Moreover, Medvedev is not liberal, of course, but in his interest to take a power, for example, canceling censorship is a real opportunity. Because if he cancels censorship, which is really constitutional charter, if you look at the Russian Constitution, chapter number 29, censorship is strictly forbidden. And Medvedev, like a lawyer, has to know that. Well, in his interest, like a weak selected successor, in his interest is to cancel censorship. He proclaimed an idea of anti-corruption campaign. This is campaign. This is PR. Everybody knows. Russia is in a terrible 147th place among Transparency International, among African countries, like Senegal, like Niger, like Zimbabwe, etc. But he proclaimed this idea, like PR. If Obama will say that, I'm very lucky and I think that this is a great idea to fight corruption in your country, but the only way to win in this fighting is canceling censorship and come back to political competition. Not because I'm big brother and you are small, like it will be a picture on TV, right? No. Well, but you know, because this is really helpful. I think that if it will be discussion, such a way, it will be great. As far as I know, realpolitik guys here don't mention values. Obama said that democracy, freedom of speech, you know, competition, this is universal values, as far as I understand. This is universal for him. For Putin, this is a real threat for his power. That's why problem is that these two guys have absolutely different values. And different values mean absence of confidence. How to reset if you have no any confidence? It's impossible. That's why to talk about values are absolutely crucial and very important point. Obama has a chance to speak in the Russian Economic School, as far as I know. Yeah. And it will be very, very important. If he didn't mention that, he say, we are Americans, we are in the free country, I'm black American, was elected because of democracy, but you are Russians, you do what you want, including Chechnya, including, you know, ammonia, including what you want. I think that it will be disaster and never he will be successful. Never. Because absence of confidence. Of course, they want to repeat Brezhnev-Nixon relationship. I understand that. This is crazy. This is crazy. I'm sure that to talk about START 1, START 2 treaty, it's not bad to talk. But they want stable and predictable relationship, as far as I understand. And they will never get it. For example, Iran. What is Putin's position? Enemy of my enemy is my friend. Iran is an enemy of the United States, right? That's why I support Iran. That's it. And nothing changes if you don't talk about values, about principles.
Jim, do you want to pick up?
Yeah, I guess I would ask you one thing. Out of your elections and out of these efforts to put Solidarnosc together and so on, are you sensing the opportunity for an organization like this to get back into the legislature in a meaningful way, either at the national or in a bunch of the local levels?
Well, it's a great question. First of all, Putin adopted very repression system to registrate parties. It's impossible to register independent party at all. He just killed independent parties, including my own SPS. SPS was killed last year. And everybody who wants to register party has to be loyal to Putin and depend on him. This is a system. That's why for solidarity, it's absolutely impossible to go to the Minister of Justice and ask that, guys, we want to be a party, we want to take in the Putin so-called elections, right? We can't do it. That's why our strategy is to be an independent and opposition solidarity and to take part in the elections like in Sochi. Mm-hmm. But don't want to register in the Putin system. To change the system, to give a chance for everybody to take part in the elections, that's okay. But to be involved in Putinism, like small part, means to forget about our own principles. That's absolutely impossible.
But what can you do at the local level? I guess this is the question, if you're running at local elections or where you can.
For example, Duma elections in Moscow, right?
Mm-hmm.
We want to take part. We have 17 districts, right, in Sochi. In Moscow, 17 districts. We want to have candidates in every district.
Mm-hmm.
After that, we have to collect about 5,000 signatures, which is tricky thing for Putin because how to register now?
Yeah.
You have to collect 5,000 signatures. After that, Putin commission check, is it good or is it bad? And they had a lot of experience, you know, to counsel all of the candidates. Last experience from St. Petersburg is very funny. For example, Jim, signed that I'm on the Nevsky Prospect, house number 1, apartments number 3, right? And signature. What Putin Commission did, they changed a number of your house, not 1, but 11, for example.
Mm.
After that, they came to the 11th house and checked. Where is Jim? There is no Jim. This is not his signature. That's it. After this, they change house for Bob, for example. He's not in the 3, but 31 house. Check. No, Bob. Look, this is fraud. This candidate is fraud. No, it's impossible to take part. That's why we understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a system. This is system. This is not, you know, like in St. Petersburg, one system, in Moscow, another. No, this is a criminal system which they organize. But anyway, we have to take part. If they don't register, this is a victory for us too.
Mm-hmm.
If they register, we use a platform to suggest what should be done in Moscow. Moscow is the most corrupted city in the world. Not long ago, wife of Lushkov, she did great job. She sold 58 hectares of land in the city of Moscow. Listen, 58 hectares of land, she sold, right? Nobody in Moscow even asked, Baturina, let you explain us how you take this land. How many nights do you spend with your husband to get this land, please? Nobody even asked this question, but do you know what does it mean in money, 58 hectares? It's a little bit more than $1 billion. Moscow land, the most, most expensive, right? Nobody even asked. That's why a topic of corruption will be absolutely crucial in upcoming elections. That's what we want to do.
Well, it's just, I must say, looking from the outside, one wishes there was more reason for hope than I think even you're giving us. If we're looking for a split between Putin and Medvedev, but Medvedev himself is not a liberal and he's not a Democrat, and
you know, Gorbachev was not Democrat.
Uh-huh. So it's he's going to lose.
He's not Gorbachev. Unfortunately, he's weaker than Gorbachev.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, he's much weaker than Gorbachev. But there are two perspectives for Russia. One is increasing of repressions. It means that Putin controls 100% of the country. He's running for elections of 2012. After that, he take a power for 12 years, according to new constitution. And we will be very happy during these upcoming years, right? Very bad scenario for everybody. Another scenario is what I'm talking, is perestroika number 2, or I don't know how to say it. Well, of course, Medvedev is not, you know, this is not our candidate. We understand everything, but he's weak, and the only chance for him to take a power is liberalization. That's it. Well, what is very important for, come back to Obama, a discussion about his schedule in Moscow, right? As far as I know, there are a lot of fighting in Washington now to meet with opposition or not. I can tell you just one point. Well, yes, Obama can meet not with opposition, but with, for example, Sergei Ivanov, with Mironov, and with Zhirinovsky. Yes, he can. It will be a victory of Putin, first point, and it will be absolutely clear sign that Obama is weak. He's weak. He's afraid of Putin. That's why he decided to meet with pro-Putin organizations or leaders, whatever. That's why I think that to show that American leader has absolutely understandable view, including Wallace, it will be very important for strategic point of view, not for tactics.
Do you want to open it up?
I think we might open it to the audience, yeah. Diana?
Yeah. I think there's a microphone coming.
There's a microphone.
There we go.
There we go. Diana's our junior fellow.
Oh, yeah.
So, Carnegie?
And at Carnegie. She's worked with me for the year, so.
Hi, I'm Diana. You mentioned that the oil prices don't have an impact in Russia right now, that it's not the same as before. Can you explain more about what you meant by that? Why you think what has brought about this change, that the oil prices aren't having the impact that they used to?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, the main god of Putin is monopoly. Monopoly everywhere. Monopoly in politics, the only one leader. Monopoly in ideology. Ideology is very simple. Nostalgia about empire. This is an ideology. And monopoly in business. Gazprom, and that's it. Putinism means censorship plus Gazprom. Right? And this is definition. If something of that canceling, it will be the end. Nevertheless, what was the first, what was the second? If you look at the fuel and energy business looked very, very inefficient. First of all, after Yukos case, nationalization of oil industry happened. Rosneft, the biggest oil company now in Russia, and very inefficient company, with a huge debt, real debt, with a lot of problems concerning bankruptcy. Gazprom, the biggest gas company in the world, looks like bankrupt because of mismanagement, because of huge corruption. We wrote with my friend Milov special report, Putin and Gazprom. You can read it more carefully in my website, nemtsov.ru. They, about 60 billion of assets disappeared from Gazprom during Putin's presidency. $60 billion in assets. Right? That's why nobody is interested in new gas fields in Yamal, for example, or in some other regions. But everybody is interested about pipeline, because this is money and Otkaty, right? Do you know Otkaty? This is Russian word.
Kickback. Yeah.
Kickback. But it's like siloviki. Otkaty has to be in English word, finally. Well, and nobody is interested. Look at the performance of Gazprom even this year. Gazprom lost European market, first of all. Terrible news. 50% after the war with Ukraine, 50% of European market. Norwegian Statoil got a lot of opportunity in the European market. Gazprom lost market in Ukraine and in neighbor's countries, and even with Lukashenko, you know, absolutely mental friend of Putin, you know, even with Lukashenko, he will get huge problems, including gas. Well, that's why Gazprom is completely corrupted, mismanaged. That's the point. Well, absence of liberalization inside Russian market. Of course, now this is crisis and demand is not so big. But after crisis will be overcome, Russia will face deficit of gas. Listen, Russia, not Ukraine, not Georgia, Russia. Why? Because Putin adopted absolutely crazy law, which is completely forbidden to organize competition in the gas market inside the country. And of course, if productivity is very low, corruption is huge, monopolization is huge, what will be the result? Well, last point, he proclaimed an idea of energy superpower, maybe you remember, in 2002. It was absolutely crazy idea, but it's happened. Russia is a real banana republic now. In 2000, 35% of export based on gas and oil. In 2008, 65%. That's why absence of diversification, absence of competition. What is more important, that the Russian economy, Putinomika, has no immunity against crisis. Has no immunity. This is economic AIDS. Right? Crisis started here. But Russia looks like, you know, like after bombing. That's why this is a result of monopolization, of corruption, of bureaucratization, absence of competition. That's it.
Svetlana?
Thank you, Svetlana Babaeva, Russian News Agency. I have two questions. First, you mentioned that the U.S. should deal with Medvedev and try to avoid Mr. Putin. So Mr. Putin is a prime minister, and a lot of decisions which are being taken are involved economic issues. For example, if we take recent closure of a military base in Manas, it was a point of giving a loan from the Russian Federation to Central Asia. And, for example, if Medvedev wants to take a kind of foreign policy decision, how he could avoid economic issues, the responsibility of Putin, and how should the United States should not keep in mind this point. And the second question, you mentioned that if Putin allows right now free elections, he and his regime will fail. Do you see, and if you do, alternative leaders, alternative politicians, instead of, for example, Putin and Medvedev? Thank you.
Well, I'm not sure that Obama will talk with Russian officials about economic issues. Well, he wants to talk about Iran, Korea, anti-ballistic missiles system. As far about START 1, START 2 treaty, right? And this is 100% presidential responsibility, 100%. Of course, for Medvedev, after these talks, it will be very difficult to explain that we have to change our budget, etc. You are right. But why Obama will think about that? Do you think that Obama has to be very careful who is responsible for budget, etc.? You know, that's a crazy position. He has to talk with person who is responsible. That's it. As far as elections, I'm not sure that it will be blitzkrieg and Putin will fail immediately, but if we cancel censorship, and information about Gazprom will appear, and, for example, information about Beslan will appear, on the information about relationship between Putin and Abramovich will appear, information how Putin helped Deripaska during the crisis will appear, right? Step by step, popularity of the gentleman will be reduced dramatically. Of course, it takes time, I agree. And after that, a lot of new guys will appear on political scene. Now it looks like dessert. You know, they fired all of the platform, just one guy, and small another. And dessert around. And Svetlana asked me, look very attentively at the dessert and find me a guy who will be the next. I want, first of all, to get Oasis, right? After Oasis, we'll find a lot of new flowers. A lot of new candidates who will run.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Roman Shpakandiai. I have two questions. One, can you talk about the situation in the Caucasus and the effect of the Putin-Medvedev regional policy on the state of the regions? Second question on dynamic between Medvedev and Putin. You've had some time now to observe them in action. Can you tell us a little bit more about the dynamic between the two in terms of the way decisions are made, who has the final say? Thank you.
Well, as far as the second question, which is simple for me, I can tell you that Putin is still controls the country, which is sad story, which is illegal, but this is reality. Well, of course, we can mention, for example, that Medvedev gave interview to Novaya Gazeta where Politkovskaya worked, you know. This is a sign. Amnesty of Svetlana Bachmina, which is terrible story, frankly, but it's happened, fortunately. For me, a real significant is just two events. First is amnesty for Khodorkovsky. If, for example, Medvedev, who is 100% responsible for that, will give amnesty for Khodorkovsky, he, in this second, he becomes the president of Russian Federation. In this second. And Putin is over. Immediately. I understand that it looks like political fantasy, maybe, but this is absolutely sunny in point. Second is council and censorship, and step by step it will be very clear after. Caucasus. Well, first point, his policy concerning neighbor countries failed completely. We have just enemies around, including Lukashenko. Including, or for example, new example, Berdimuhamedov. Do you know this gentleman? Turkmenistan, the biggest enemy now of Russia. I explain you why. It was contract about gas. Putin wanted to avoid Nabucco pipeline system, right? And he suggested Berdimuhamedov last year to buy Turkmenistan gas for very expensive price. Price was 340. And Berdimuhamedov, like a businessman, agreed. After that, European market dropped down. Now its price is 250. And Gazprom looks like bankrupt to buy Turkmenistan gas. And what was Putin's decision? Do you know? He organized explosion on pipeline and ask, forget about your gas. I don't want to buy it. That's it. Do you think that this is a policy concerning neighbors? That's why he failed all of the neighbor policy at all. At all. Caucasus is a real disaster. Georgia. Recognition of two countries. I don't know, or two areas. Well, I want just to tell you one very important point. Patriarch Alexei II, right, who died. When, after recognition, Kremlin pressed very much to Patriarch to recognize for Russian Church Ossetia and Abkhazia. And Alexei II, who is not dissident, who is not Democrat, who is not a strongly supporter of liberals at all, he said no. Alexei II, not Nemtsov. Well, and this is very important. This is huge mistake. Why just Daniel Ortega, just one guy throughout the world? Even stupid guy Chavez didn't. Ortega, Lukashenko, no recognition. Lukashenko, even for money. Well, this is disaster. Look what's happened in the South Ossetia. Corruption, no renovation at all, no renovation. In Georgia, in the border in Georgia, where Saakashvili is under control, he's not, you know, angel Saakashvili. Believe me, I know him. Well, he's not angel. But if you look at, for example, renovation after the war, he did a lot. Ossetia, nothing. Destroying and money disappeared. That's it. And this recognition is terrible because there is no chance now to come back. How? Bad relationship, yes, forever, and no exit. Well, just one country we have good relationship. This is Armenia. Armenia, the last neighbor with good relationship is Russia. I explain you why. No chance at all. Turkey, Azerbaijan, Nagorno-Karabakh, huge immigration, no jobs at all, huge crisis inside. That's why the only hope is Russia. That's why, nevertheless, what's happened in Armenia, it will be friendly. Not because they like, because there is no choice.
The North Caucasus.
Russian Caucasus. Recognition of Ossetia and Abkhazia is a first step to disintegration of Russia. Disintegration of Russia. Why? Look at Kadyrov, for example. It was an invisible contract between Putin and Kadyrov. I give you money, billions of dollars every year. You give me loyal behavior, right? This is contract. Now money is over. Deficit of the budget is $100 billion. Russian deficit, $100 billion. That's why step by step, Kadyrov will be a little bit nervous. Finally, he will say, okay, that's great. What's the difference between Chechens and South Ossetians or Abkhaz? What's the difference? I want to be independent. Great examples. Separatism is a real problem for Russia. That's why Putin gives great examples to do the same. Not now, maybe, because central bank reserves is about $400 billion now, but in the future. Well, of course, huge tension inside Ingushetia, terrorists. Even after resignation of Zyazikov, a lot of problems now. Dagestan is like you know, unpredictable area, and it's very, very difficult. Because everything based on criminal code. I give you money, you give me loyal behavior. I close my eyes on every subject, corruption, you know, terrorism, kidnapping, whatever. It doesn't matter. Just loyal to me. Because the main value for the judgment is power. Not Russia like a country, not progress, not success. Power and money.
I think Ariel Cohen wanted to jump in here.
Yeah,
right in the front.
Andre, could you add the next
one? Boris, a lot of people in the administration are concerned with the anti-American sentiment in Russia. When we were young, the United States was, you know, the shining city on the hill from where the blue jeans came from and chewing gum. Today, Russia has blue jeans, it has chewing gum, and it has a lot of anti-American sentiment that comes in poll after poll. You have state-controlled television that provides this anti-American diet day after day. But in the Soviet time, there was more propaganda, but people didn't believe it. Why do you think there is the push for anti-Americanism? What can we do about it here? And what the more enlightened, more progressive forces in Russia who understand the necessity to integrate Russia into the global economy and the world can do about this anti-American sentiment? What can you do to expand the circle of younger people who support your forces? Thank you.
Well, Ariel, let's remember what's happened in September 11. It was thousands of Russians who put flowers in American embassy in Moscow. It was Putin, young Putin, who called to Bush and say about apologize that that's a real very sad for Russian people, etc. It was not anti-American feelings at all. After that, when he decided to come back to Soviet nostalgia like an opportunity to raise his popularity, right? Like for domestic reasons. He used anti-American rhetorics just to increase his popularity inside. I believe that if you will get finally honest information about the West and America in particular, not Putin propaganda or Goebbels propaganda, but such kind of honest information, it will be enough to avoid what's happened now. You know, our country has no public opinion at all. Public opinion means in this country just first and second channel. This is not public opinion. For example, if I will be in the office in Kremlin and say, enough guys, let you explain us truth. Forget about some Pavlovsky story, forget about some Leontief story. All of this looks like fraud and dishonest information. Let you tell truth. That's it. I think that it will be enough to change public opinion mind. This is just about Konstantin Ernst and Dobrodeyev position. Of course, not them, but their bosses. That's why I don't think that this is in the soul of Russian people, that they hate America. They don't. Of course, Iraqi war played terrible role, especially one sentence which Bush did. He said that we are in Iraq because we want to build democracy. What Putin propaganda did, they showed bloody streets in Baghdad. They show victims, you know, terrorists, etc. After that, somebody like Leontief say, this is democracy. American democracy. That's it. Well, that's why I think that Obama has no such kind of problems at all. You know, he's a Hollywood star. He can start from absolutely clear list.
Andre, you.
Thank you. Boris, I read your brilliant book, Putin and Gazprom. It's a very good job for the future Moscow process. But the problem with Mr. Medvedev is that he was the chairman of the board during the period when $80 billion were channeled out by Putin brigade to a private company connected with his friends and relatives. This is his fundamental difference from Gorbachev. So my question to you, what makes you believe that Medvedev can abandon censorship? I think that it's extremely dangerous for him, because certainly for the first day, the people will discuss on TV channels Putin theft and murders committed by him. But on the second or third day, they discuss the business biography of Mr. Medvedev, beginning with his Nizhny Novgorod lobbying criminals from East Elim Company, and you know perfectly well, and ending with your book.
Thank you, Andre. And Andre knows everything about my life, including including even our excited story with Medvedev when he was a very young boy. It's funny story. He wanted to take part in privatization of paper mill company in Nizhny Novgorod. Mm-hmm. And I sent a letter. He worked for Elim Pipe, I mean, Medvedev. And I sent a letter to the general, FSB general, Mr. Bulavin, because of rules. They had to give me an information about money laundering. Is it clean money or not, etc. A few weeks later, I got from FSB a report that Elim Pipe is an organizing criminal group. Well, and it's absolutely impossible for this group to take part in privatization. Well, and I talked with Smushkin, who was the boss of Elim Pipe, and asked, you know, you represent organizing criminal group. That's why it's impossible for you to take part. And Medvedev, next time, immediately came to my office and asked, Boris, I'm a representative of organizing criminal group. Can you explain what's happened? I show him a letter from FSB and ask, guys, I know everything. I know about bribes inside FSB. I know about, you know, competition, so-called competition. I give you 2 weeks to change this letter. Well, 2 weeks is it enough for you to change the letter? He said, oh, 2 weeks is great. Well, and he disappeared forever. Mm-hmm. I met him when he was the chief of administration. No. Bulavin called me and asked that. These guys, you know, they came to me, asked something, you know, suggested something. That's a good idea. What's your response? My response is the same. This is letter, which I send you. That's it. This is our talks when he was 20, maybe 4 years old or 25. Mm-hmm. Well, he remembered this story, unfortunately. I don't know, fortunately or unfortunately. But anyway, come back to your question, which is absolutely important. First of all, Andre, I don't think that Medvedev is our hero, and I don't think that he's our political, you know, partner. I don't think so. But if, as far as corruption is concerned, and you know that, as far as corruption is concerned, he's absolutely small boy compared with Putin. Very small. I know Chuchinka, I know what was his position like a chairman of the board of Gazprom. Frankly, like position of the president now. He had position, like you mentioned. But all of the decisions were made by Putin. All of them, including underground decisions. For example, decisions concerning Kovalchuk, right? Gazprom Bank, for example, etc. I agree that he will be a little bit nervous because he was a chairman. But what is his chance to be the president, frankly? If nothing happened, if Putinism, like, you agree, right? This is censorship plus Gazprom. If nothing happened in this structure, he will never be the president. Maybe he even doesn't want, I don't know. Because, you know, who knows? Maybe his wife knows better. But problem is that there is an opportunity. I don't know what's a percentage. I don't know that. But this is another opportunity, and you know that. This is repression. Come back. I don't want it. Of course, investigation concerning Chuchinka, concerning, for example, Rosokoronerga, I know that. Very interesting story. We didn't mention that in our book, but we know how Rosokoronerga was founded, what was the role of Timoshenko and others. I think that we have a time to prepare a new book, but well, but finally, maybe with Andrei together, because he mentioned our book in his articles. Well, I don't think that he is a real in danger compared with Putin. In a real danger, I don't think so.
Okay. John, did you?
John Evans, I was U.S. Consul General in St. Petersburg when Mr. Putin was deputy mayor and Mr. Medvedev was there and various other people.
You're a lucky man.
Well, we saw them in their early days. There's a new development, and that is this new list, like a nomenclatura, which Sergei Naryshkin is having a role in. And I wonder if you have any comments on what this is meant to be.
Mm-hmm. Problem of Putin regime is absence of professional and honest candidates for every state position. That's why everybody from St. Petersburg who started to go to the kindergarten with Putin, to school, etc., have already taken a position in the Moscow level. That's why this is a real problem. For example, when it was a story about Kirovskaya region, right, where Nikita Belykh now is a governor, one of the reasons, last reason, but one of the reasons why he invited him, because nobody wants and nobody can. That's the point. And they understand that. Generally speaking, they understand that. And they decided to prepare this list. But what is important, that if Putin has a choice between professional on one side and non-professional but loyal, he always make a choice, non-professional, loyal. If he has a chance to appoint corrupted or honest, it's better to appoint corrupted, because corrupted means loyal. No, corrupted means loyal. That's why it looks mainly like PR, mainly. Which is not bad. There are a lot of very good guys inside this list. I know this list. It's about few hundreds, right? There are a lot of very, very good guys. But first of all, they don't work with Putin like you in St. Petersburg. Secondly, nobody checks them about their loyal or non-loyal. That's why to be appointed on a key position, this is very questionable, very questionable.
You know, Boris, one hears a certain line of argument about Putin losing interest in power, that he doesn't work very long hours, that he didn't really want to remain in power. He had to for a variety of reasons. He's got a nice villa in Italy. And
I know that.
There's a lot of... you may know better than I do, but there's a whole scenario that I think some people are attracted to, that really, at the end of the day, he would like to get out of this business with all his money. Do you? I mean, what is your sense of that?
He likes Berlusconi. He likes Berlusconi very much. And he spent a lot of time in Sardinia, that's true. And he wants to be like Berlusconi. What's the difference? Berlusconi is a rich prime minister with huge scandals inside, with investigations, but now everybody knows that Berlusconi is a multi-millionaire who control Milano Football Club, who control five channels in Italy, who control everything, but he is legal. Legal like a multi-millionaire. Legal in Italian point of view, not in American, but forget about it. Yeah, I know what's happened in South Carolina, you know, that's a special country. Well, this is not Berlusconi case, that's another one. Well, but, you know, we are from Europe. Don't forget about that. And what's the problem of Putin? He's a very rich guy, I'm sure. Problem is that it's difficult to legalize. And why I don't trust and I don't even believe in any stories concerning he wants to be retired. I don't believe in this story because how to legalize everything. That's why I don't think so that he will be ready. He will keep power not because he wants to go to Kremlin every day, you know, to destroy traffic at all in Moscow for a few hours. You know, and everybody still vote for him. I don't know, 2 hours of waiting. Everybody just use very special words, but nevertheless, vote for him. Well, but he doesn't want to work. I agree. Lazy guy. But how to protect safety, how to protect freedom, how to protect your own money? Just to keep power, that's it. What do you mean? To exchange Khodorkovsky and Putin? Like Bukovsky and Korvalov. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Natalia Saraeva, U.S. Russia Business Council. Thank you, first of all, for a very interesting talk today. And my question is, with such terrible things that are happening now, like monopolization and nationalization, how do you see the future of foreign direct investments in Russia and future foreign business? And if you see some, in which area in particular?
Yeah, that's a good question. One of the reasons why economy in Russia looks so bad is that of capital flight. Capital flight is concerned with, first of all, Russian business community. Russian business community doesn't trust government and is very afraid. That's why if they have any opportunity to take money away, they will do. Second point, Putin is not interested in direct investment, which is maybe a new point, but this is true. You can invite in Carnegie Browder. Do you know him?
Oh, yeah.
He will explain in his personal example what's happened with his biggest investment fund. Mm-hmm. First of all, they cancel his visa without any explanation. Finally, they steal his property, and he lose $100 million. Nothing happened. Story concerning Sakhalin the second with Shell, right? Story about BP. Story now concerning Wimpelcom, etc. A lot of legal limitations for investment appeared during the last few years. Do you know that? For example, they changed an investment law in Russia, and if you want to invest in so-called strategic areas, a strategic areas, frankly, means everything. They can proclaim every branch of industry like strategic. This is just decision of the government. Well, you have to investigate to find a very complicated procedure how to invest money, etc. There is legal limitations, first of all, to the fuel and the energy sector. Huge limitations. As far as small and average business are concerned, no limitations, but people are very afraid of corruption and bureaucratization. why he behaved in such a way. He believed that Russian money have unlimited amount of Russian money in Cyprus and in some offshore areas, and the main task is how to attract Russian money back. This is absolutely understandable policy. What is more important, that he is very afraid of competition. Last terrible event, what I mean is canceling talks about WTO. This is his spontaneous decision, which is completely against Russian interests. But this decision comes not because he is from the madhouse, no, because he's afraid of competition. WTO means increasing of competition in insurance business, in banking sector, agricultural sector, everywhere. This is absolutely predictable decision. If you come back to his mental points, the most important absence, how to avoid competition. That's it. That's why I'm afraid that he is not interested in a real investment. And this is a very sad story because high tech, you know, new technology, scientific business, everything is nothing in Russia. And this is a huge problem. Just export of gas and oil. This is absolutely his policy. He doesn't think so. He thinks that money from the states, for example, help the State Department, you know. And he's KGB. Don't forget about that. He believes that American journalists represent CIA, American companies represent State Department. He believes in that. This is not a joke. He really believes in that. Everything has to be under control. Unfortunately, the threat is not from the states. Threat is coming from China. From China. China companies really depend on Communist Party. I mean, first of all, oil business, gas business, pipeline system, etc. This is Communist Party. But who cares about China? He just presented our land to Chinese. Do you know that they signed not long ago, he signed an agreement with Chinese government. He presented them very important, strategic important islands in Amur River. Now Chinese decided to build a city with 2 million population in Khabarovsk. In Khabarovsk. He gave a part of Khabarovsk to Chinese. Chinese decided 2 million of people. Yeah. They started to build new city, 2 million people. The population of Khabarovsk Krai is 1 million. Well, he's very afraid of China, and he doesn't understand that we have a problem with China, huge problem. I can tell you that problem with China looks much more serious than with America. Frankly, I don't know any problems with America at all. I asked even when we talked with each other, it was 9 years ago, I asked, can you give me an example when America fight against Russia? Just one. America fight against Russia. One example. And I immediately agree with threat from America, anti-Americanism, about everything. No examples. Even in the Bolshevik Revolution, American government supported white army, which was great. American army was with white Russian army, which was great. Help Russia, even at that time. No examples. Supportive of Japan in what? Where? To bomb nuclear bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki?
1904.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Didn't fight, just support, you know? Yeah. That's a little bit different, right?
Well, let me ask you this, because you were circling around it. Does Putin have a foreign policy, or is it all about money? Because from the outside, it looks like he does have a foreign policy, but I've been assured by my Russian friends that he's only interested in money. But
he, you know, Bob, it's a combination, money and policy. For him, sometimes it's the same, right? But he has quite sustainable view, for example, to the West. He has absolutely predictable response concerning the U.S. ideas. Second enemy is not, the first is the U.S. The second is the United Kingdom. Sometimes even I think that the United Kingdom is more enemy than the U.S. because this is personal problem. Personal. Berezovsky, some others, you know. And problem is that he even believed that the United Kingdom collect all of his enemies in London and to protect them. The U.S. look better. The U.S. don't collect. Well, maybe it's just few very small enemies from UCAS. That's it. That's nothing. Compared with London City, that's really nothing. Well, that's why he has policy, anti-Western policy. This is a policy. And that's very understandable, because to be against the West means to be against freedom, democracy, rules of law. This is a policy.
But the assumption, I think, of two American, not just the Obama administration, but two administrations, really, is that relations with Russia went bad largely because of Russian reactions to American actions, whether it was Kosovo, whether it was the Iraq War, and particularly it was NATO enlargement. And that really this is a creation of a policies which we can understand he seeing as aggressive.
If you want to know my opinion, I think that Kosovo was a mistake, real mistake. What's happened now in Kosovo? Do you think that Muslim state inside Europe is good? I'm not sure. Well, and it gives him a chance to explain himself and the world why he occupied Ossetia and Abkhazia. Well, this is a mistake. Bombing of Belgrade was a mistake. Well, and of course, Iraqi war was a mistake. You did some mistakes in your life, that's true. Well, but I'm not sure that this is, a reason why he becomes anti-American. He was anti-American from the beginning, from KGB school. This background, you know. And when he got examples that why he's anti-American, he will use it, of course.
I think you haven't had a chance. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm Robert Ortung from the Jefferson Institute. I wanted to ask you about the role of the internet in Russia. And so there you have relatively free speech, relatively little censorship. Why hasn't the internet played a bigger role in promoting democracy in Russia?
Yeah, that's a good question. Let's come back to Sochi elections. We understood that there is no any opportunity to use media except internet. What's happened on internet in Sochi? First of all, just 11% of families, just 11, have internet. What is more important, that infrastructure is terrible. For example, to open email, it takes 15 minutes in Sochi. Every email, you know? That's why fast internet is like a future. This is the capital of the Olympic Games. Don't forget about that. This is the capital of Olympic Games, right? 11%. We look more attentively on the structure of the users, right? Users of internet. It's funny. Among this 11%, 80% are interested just in porno sites. That's why we canceling our idea to use internet in Sochi to raise our popularity, right? Because to implement advertisement in porno site, that's maybe a good idea. But
is that open faster?
But we are not so brave, We are not so brave. Well, what we have very good situation in the city of Moscow. Very good situation. Internet plays real important role, and millions of Moscovites use internet and switch on Putin TV. That's true. St. Petersburg look a little bit not bad, but not like Moscow. Ural city like Ekaterinburg, some other big cities, not bad. But so-called small cities, monotowns, etc., that's disaster. Communications are very weak. Infrastructure is very weak. Technology does not really implement it enough to have fast internet. But step by step, of course, people are interested in internet, and I believe that finally it looks better than now. And finally, we will take it. About censorship and internet, this is a new point in Russia. Structure of internet is like in the States. We have three very important websites, mail.ru, Rambler.ru, and Yandex.ru. These three websites control about 75% of internet market. 75%. These websites belong to different business group in Russia, but there is censorship inside. When I wanted to use internet, Mail.ru, in campaign of 2007, an owner, who is my friend, said, Boris, do you want me to forget about my business? You will insist in the future. It was forbidden, strictly forbidden to use. These three websites are under Surkov control now. Mm-hmm. Yes, we have free. We have Samizdat in the internet, right? We have Samizdat. Well, Samizdat exists in the Soviet Russia. Now we have Samizdat. For example, Granny.ru. This is Samizdat. Kasparov.ru or Yosh.ru, etc. Ari Elipir. So don't forget, this is Samizdat. Well, Samizdat is free. You can put everything. Censorship is organized not in a stupid way. What is the Putin system? If you have popular media, popular means rating more than 1%, just more than 1%. You have popular media, this is censorship. That's why TV is under control and big websites are under control. Komsomolskaya Pravda, Moskovsky Komsomolets, Argumenty i Fakty, something, millions of circulations per week or per day, right? This is censorship. Small newspapers, Vedomosti, Kommersant, Novaya Gazeta, and small websites are free. Who cares? And Echo Moskvy, plus. Echo Moskvy belongs to Gazprom, and it's free. Why? Rating is less than 1%. First of all, it's impossible to get Echo Moskvy in Sochi, even in Nizhny Novgorod. Nizhny Novgorod is blocked for Echo Moskvy. And a lot of cities around Moscow, it's impossible to get information. That's why it's free. And Moscow-wise, of course, they have a lot of information from internet, plus Echo Moskvy, plus Novaya Gazeta, plus Kommersant, Vedomosti, etc. Well, but in the future, internet looks, I believe, that this is a hope.
I think this gentleman had a question here.
Thank you very much. Very interesting speeches. My name is Takao, correspondent of NHK. I've just arrived here, Washington, D.C. Before that, I have stationed in Moscow for 8 years. So I followed your several election campaign also.
And in Sochi, right?
Not really. In Moscow and Nizhny Novgorod. And I'm happy to see you here in Washington. It's interesting for me. Actually, I have several questions. Do you think that Medvedev can be really an independent, real president? Because Putin selected him as a successor last autumn. And you know, why Putin chose Medvedev as his successor. And because Putin chose him as his successor, that means he's just a puppet, isn't it? Are there any possibility he can be really dependent president? And second question is, what would be the future of the Democrats in Russia, including yourself? Last year, SPS collapsed, and forced to collapse, maybe I should say. And now Chubais and Kirienko are really the Putin sides, working for his side. Do you think who will be the core member of the Democrats in the future, except you, yourself? Thank you.
Well, what was a principle to find successor? I mean, Putin principle. First, to be loyal, and second, to be weak. And he did. He found to be loyal and weak. His name is Medvedev. Well, that's why this is a mystery even for me. Is he, does he have some chance to be independent and quite strong to proceed his policy? I don't know an answer. Really, I don't know. Well, it will be great for me and for Russia if finally he will become a president, but I'm not sure that he can. I'm not sure. Well, as far as future of Democrats, it depends on our activity, not in here, but in Russia. You will repeat success in Sochi, step by step to be more popular, if people will understand what we want, or what is our difference, what is our goal, what is our program, we have a chance. But it takes a lot of time. Next question concerning Chubais, Kiriyenko, pro-Putin, etc. Yes, we have two groups among Democrats. One group who believe that to be with a power means to improve power. This is Chubais. Another group believe that to change system from inside, it's absolutely impossible. I am from physics, you know. I forget about everything. But I'm like a physicist. I can tell you about the third Newton law. It's impossible to change an impulse from inside. This is not a political law. This is the third Newton law. Well, that's why I think to be inside means to do nothing. Maybe for yourself you can do, but to change system from inside, it's impossible. That's why I'm outside, of course. Well, unification. Solidarity is quite good example for unification. In the history of Russian liberals and Democrats, I don't remember any cases when people from Yabloko, SPS, from some other youth organization, etc., will be together. Solidarity is this example. Plus, we have Vladimir Bukovsky, you know, famous dissident. Plus, we have Lev Ponomarev, Samadurov, and others who are from human rights. But what is more important, that if you look at the border of solidarity, 20 of our friends, including Vladimir Karamurza, are younger than 30 years. Vladimir Milov, Ilya Yashin, Vladimir Karamurza, this is new generation of Democrats, which is a real hope. Well, that's why we are thinking about successors too. Well, finally we will find somebody.
Yes.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Jonathan Gelbart from Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I was just wondering how you felt about the current mortality problem in Russia and the extremely low life expectancy.
Mortality.
Smartness.
Yeah, demographic decline and extremely low life expectancy in Russia. The labor force is expected to decline by 10 million people in the next few years. So is that going to affect the regime's outlook? Or, like, Putin is... And Medvedev has declared it a national priority to fix it, but do you think that's going to affect Russia?
That's a real a question of strategic security of Russia. This is a real, and I think that this is the first question. Because Russia is the biggest in terms of size country, and this country you can't control big size without population. We have declining every year about 400,000. Average age for men in Russia is 59 years old, like in African countries. This is the worst result among European countries, including even Ukraine. Ukraine looks better. Well, that's why this is a real problem. Well, what's the reason? We described that in our report, Putin point results. First point is health problem. Terrible medical care. Terrible. If you look at the structure of the deaths, mainly deaths come from heart attack, and not because we have a lot of heart attack. Heart attack we have the same like in the States, but nobody help you if it's happened. Nobody. That's why this is a problem of absence of efficient and not expensive health care. Well, we have in this country very expensive but very efficient system, right? In Russia, we have very expensive and very inefficient system. That's a problem.
There are those in this country saying so do we, but that's another.
Well,
but we have.
But this is very important. Second is health problem, smoking and alcohol. If you look at the results of Putin presidency, nobody pay attention on that. But, for example, cigarettes. It's interesting, cigarettes. In 2000, it was about 80 boxes per year for one person in Russia, 80. In 2008, 150 boxes. 150. Look at the results of cancer and heart attack. Terrible. Alcohol. 15 liters of spirit per year. A level of depopulation is 8 liters. Russia now has 15 liters. This is really huge, huge question. And no anti-alcoholic campaign. I don't want to repeat Ligachev and Gorbachev campaign, of course. But I think that to explain people that to be in a good shape, this is great for you and for your family, I don't think that this is a bad idea. The same happened with cigarettes. Absolutely the same. Well, nobody cares about that because it doesn't reflect on the power and popularity. Next point, immigration policy. Immigration policy based on xenophobes. We hate immigrants. We want them to work at night to clean our streets, you know, to drive our cars, etc., you know, to clean our houses, to be housekeeper in our homes, but at the day they have to be disappear everybody. And this is official policy. For example, my oldest daughter, Jana, she is 25. She was arrested not long ago. And police arrested her and asked that she is Chechen and she has no passport. That's why she will be in the police station. After that, she asked that, let I call to my father. And fortunately, one guy asked, okay, call. She called and asked this gentleman, let you make her free immediately. She's my daughter. Do you know what was his response? Maybe this is your daughter, but she looks like Chechen. You know, and this example is very important to know that immigration policy is nothing in the country. And that's terrible. If you don't want to support a level of population, let's help people to come and to start some life and business. But no, that's why depopulation is the real threat for Russia, a real, very serious threat.
Toby?
And his policy to give $10,000 if you finally get the second kid, that's not enough.
No.
Because problem is not $10,000 per kid. Problem is that 59 years old, a toll for man.
Toby Gotti, Ekinger.
We know, Toby, you very well.
Boris, an anti-Western outlook doesn't mean that there aren't objective reasons to cooperate with the United States. Can you look at a couple of issues, starting with, of course, Iran, Afghanistan, and talk about the kinds of cooperation that you think Russia would show on some of those issues, and at what point would it stop? Would it stop when it seemed the United States was gaining power? Would it stop when Russian interests, however they're defined, were met? Can you just speculate a little?
Well, first of all, I think that what is the real promising is North Korean case. Fortunately, even Putin understand that this guy had missiles, but not long distance, but short distance. And what is important that he launched missile, but he doesn't know where this missile will land. Even Putin understands that. That's very good news for you. Well, to talk about North Korea is not a bad idea. I believe that they voted in the United Nations about sanctions not because, you know, they want to help you, but they want to help themselves. But in 2004, as far as I remember, it was several launches, and they landed in the not far from Vladivostok. But nobody cared about that at that time. Now they recognize that there is some threat. Afghanistan, this is absolutely a pro-Russian project. Absolutely pro-American, pro-Russian project. Frankly, I was so surprised about Kyrgyzia story, and I don't know. I understand that anti-American, etc., but why did they do this? Americans sent troops to protect Russia, finally. That's so easy, you know. Maybe they're afraid that American base will be forever. I think that it talks about troops, American troops in Middle Asian area will be fruitful if you will proclaim an idea of deadline. The deadline will be like this, for example. I don't know, 2000. I don't know, but 2011, 2012, what doesn't matter. Well, or maybe some common service, I don't know. Well, Iran. Iran, I have an idea about Iran. Now, I don't think that you will get some success. I don't think so. But there is absolutely new idea. New idea is concerned not with nuclear program, but with gas. As you remember, he's a businessman, right? He is about money, mainly. Well, now you want to build Nabucco. Not you, but Europeans mainly. Nabucco has a problem, no gas, enough gas. Some new fields in Turkmenistan, but not enough. If you suggest Iran to be involved in Nabucco, I explain you. This is a great idea. You don't understand, Ariel. I explain you why. You buy Iran oil, right? Nobody asks you, why do you buy Iran oil? Nobody. You buy it. Not you, maybe Europeans. As far as gas is concerned, do not defend on just one Ahmadinejad, but to suggest him, we have Turkmenistan gas, we have Azerbaijan gas, we have maybe even Kazakhstan gas, and let you will be involved like a part. If Putin will recognize that Ahmadinejad is a real competitive person to his own private Gazprom, it will be the end of friendship. It will be the end of friendship, believe me. Maybe a part of Iran. Iran is the second, as far as capacity is concerned, Iran is the second country after Russia, as far as gas fields are concerned, right? I agree that to depend on Ahmadinejad, it's disaster. But to be a part of the project, like, I don't know, 10% maybe, this is not bad. This is not bad for gas supply of Europe. This is not bad even for nuclear program. This is complicated maybe for Obama because he's not a businessman, but this is very easy for Putin. If he recognizes that Ahmadinejad is involved in the enemy project, which name is Nabucco, it will be enough to find compromise in nuclear. I think that Putin or Medvedev will be softer concerning Iran when he will launch missiles, like North Korean. And sometimes landing will happen nobody knows where. Maybe they are waiting for such kind of event. I don't know. Well, what else? European anti-ballistic program. Well, I think that it will be difficult to talk about that. In Bush administration, it was suggestion to use Russian area to be involved, right? I think that that's not a bad idea even now. But as far as I know, Obama cut all of the financing of this project. Not cut?
Cut.
Well, that's why to talk that let's do it together in some aspect. This is a good idea. But I can tell you, Toby, just one point. Maybe you will find decision in North Korea. I even sure that you will do, and in Satwan. But this is not predictable. This is like with Brezhnev, right? If you are ready to talk with Russian officials like with Brezhnev, you are on the right track. But remember that it will be absolutely unpredictable, and this is not peaceful, and this is not resetting, of course. This is resetting, but in the past. This is resetting. Come back to Brezhnev and Nixon. Do you want it? I don't think so. That's why values are important. Why this is not Brezhnev? Because there are a lot of young persons who had known about Soviet Union. There are a lot of business community who don't want to be in the prison, right? A lot of guys who understand what does mean globalization, traveling throughout the world, etc. Well, Russia is a part of a global economy. That's why to come back to Brezhnev time, start one, start two, and finish, I don't think that this is a good idea.
Boris, we've got time for one more question, and I'm going to ask it. you mentioned that, and you're correct, that Obama will give a speech.
I know.
No, well, I'm quite sure he will. What would you have him say in that speech? You said a couple
like
of things
a speech writer, right?
Yeah. You said a couple of things you wouldn't like him to say, but what would you like him to say, and who would you have him talk to?
Well, first of all, I'm sure that he must mention values. Mm-hmm. If he didn't, he failed, believe me. He failed. Second point, as far as rhetorics are concerned, it will be very friendly, not like big brother, mad small, friendly, mm-hmm. but very clear. Very clear. Third point, I think that it will be great if he will mention problems openly. Mm-hmm. Yes, we have problems. And explain openly what's the difference and what openly. Because there is Putin propaganda about everything, even about Afghanistan, right? But to organize censorship concerning Obama's speech, it will be difficult.
Yeah.
That's why this is very rare for America to explain position. Mm-hmm. It's a very rare case. I remember when I was a young boy, when Ronald Reagan made a New Year speech in the communist Soviet Union. I was a very small boy, I don't know. Well, and I watched on this face for the first time in my life, the President of the United States said about values and about Russian people like a real friendly nation, etc. And it was absolutely remarkable deal. If he said that we understand that you do these, we have very resetting new relationship, it's nothing. I think that he has to mention problems and explain American position. Mm-hmm. And don't be afraid that he will be an enemy of Russian people. I can tell you that his popularity, especially among Russian women, I believe even higher than popularity of Medvedev, not Putin.
But we have all.
That's why. And as far as I understand, elections for him in Russia will never happen. That's why if he will proceed, he's absolutely clean messages, it will be great. Well, what is important? To meet with opposition. Not because I'm opposition. Of course, it will be a great honor for me to meet. But if he will meet with Putin guys, what this? Even for American public opinion, what is? What is? What does it mean? That's why I understand that maybe this is even symbolic, right? But that's very important. I understand that we are responsible for our country, and we don't think that, you know, Obama helped us very much. This is our responsibility, and Obama doesn't help us. He has a lot of problem here. But to show that he understands that there are some others who believe in freedom, democracy, human rights, globalization, open society, etc., it will be great.
All right. Well, I think maybe we should thank you for, as always, a very interesting conversation. Thank you.
Thank you,
thank you all for coming. Thank you.